Blog Talk Radio.
Recruiting Animal here on September 18th, 2013. September 18th, 2013. You know, I was reading Twitter yesterday, and I came upon a posting by my good friend, Rayanne Thorne, and she said a recent survey of 1,600 companies. Actually, she said respondents. I assume that's unique individual companies, okay? She said 1,600 companies reported that 60% of them had saved an average, listen to this, of $20,000 annually by using social recruiting. These companies, 60% of the respondents, saved $20,000 annually by using social recruiting. And you know what? That made me mad! And you know why? Because I knew what it really meant. It meant these companies recruited someone using LinkedIn. They went to LinkedIn, which is essentially a resume bank, just like on a job board, and they did a search, and they came up with a profile, and they called that person, or they sent an email or an in-mail. LinkedIn, I admit, has discussions, too, where people are social with each other online, but that's not how most people get hired online, and that's not what these articles mean when they say they hired someone by social recruiting. Well, yeah, and then I saw John Sumser, my good friend, quote an article that said 92% of U.S. companies are using social media networks to recruit talent. And if you're a recruiter, you know they're using the LinkedIn database way more than any of its social interaction functions. But if that's social recruiting, if using that database is social recruiting, you might as well call any job board resume bank social recruiting as well. You know, friends, when a lawyer wants to take advantage of you, the very first thing he does is start messing around with words. Remember Bill Clinton? I did not have sex with that woman. You know why they do that? Because once the words have many meanings, it's very easy to confuse you. And that's what these liars, these lying propagandists for social recruiting are trying to do. We know what social media is. It's sites like Twitter and Facebook and online discussion groups where you socialize with other people. And as I said, LinkedIn has some discussion groups too. But the people who write these articles, they want you to believe that searching LinkedIn's database is social recruiting. They won't call it social recruiting when you search a resume database on a job board, but wake up, everybody! The exact same thing. So when someone tells you that 92% of companies are doing social recruiting or 60% of companies are saving $20,000 a year by using social recruiting, you should ask them exactly what they mean. My guess is they're out and out lying. That's my guess. But my guest isn't going to lie to you today on Jerry Jerry. What show is this?
This is the Recruiting Animal Show. Oh, I'm out of air. Oh, man. Oh, I've got some pizza stuck in my throat.
Dad, thanks for eating pizza just before you come on the show, Jerry.
Send help.
Okay.
I'm not kidding.
Okay. So anyway,
oh, Rebecca.
Here we are. And I'm going to introduce my guest right away. Her name is Rebecca Sargent. She's right here in Southern Ontario, not exactly in Toronto. Rebecca is a recruiting coach and trainer. Is that right, Rebecca?
Yep, that's exactly right.
That's exactly right. And your website, right? Let's tell people right at the start, because I often fail to do that. What's your website?
It's rbs-staffing.com.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I told you before,
I know.
Hyphens are no good. rbs-staffing.com. Okay,
hate
and
it.
What's your Twitter?
Hate it.
Yeah, good.
Come on. Jerry.
He's
no,
right.
I still get traction out there. I still get 100 hits a day.
Oh,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and
she hits
100
name, people a day.
Yeah.
Rebecca, your Twitter name?
Rebecca Sargent. Which I've just
been spelled REBECCASARGEANT. Sargent is a screwy word, right?
Yes.
Okay, so Rebecca Sargent, just your name on Twitter. Okay, and is there anything else we have to do to introduce you?
No, no.
Okay.
I think everybody out there pretty much. Go ahead.
You tried to pull one over on me when I asked you to prepare for the thing. I don't know what's wrong with my guests. They're always against me. And you tried to shaft me secretly by saying, look, recruiting animal, I have so much on this topic. Both search documents.
Hey, I got to call back in. I'm calling
ahead.
Back
oh,
in.
Oh, Jerry's
got to
go
minutes.
Make money.
Yep, sorry,
yeah.
man.
That's okay, Jerry. You go away. Okay, and anyway, so you said search documents.
I'm going to make a sandwich.
Yeah. Anyway, you said search documentation that I've never heard about is a really big topic, and you can fill a whole show with search documentation. But now you told me just before the show started, no, you really can't, just like I suspected. But I'm going to fool you because I've got other questions for you as well. But we're going to start off with search documentation. First, tell us what it is, then tell us some great stories to show how important it really is, okay?
Yep. So we're talking about documenting for our clients the entire recruitment process. And I've taken it and laid it out in 25 steps. I've seen it as short as 7 steps and seen it as long as 50 steps. But it's documentation that we should be giving to our clients to validate our price and help them understand that the reason they pay us 20-25% is because of all the steps that we have to take on their behalf. It's also helping recruiters go from a contingent search to a more retained search because they separate themselves from everybody else.
Mm-hmm. You know what? I have to tell you, I used to do work with a guy subcontracting for a retained search guy. And, he used to give these search process maps to the clients and talk about how he was doing holistic recruiting. And, you know, I was doing all the work, and it kind of made me sick to see that stuff. But, you know, if you're saying it's a good bluff, and they'll give you more money. They'll give you more money if you do that. Explain it to us. Give us some great examples of what a search documentation looks like, okay?
Okay, so the documentation or the flowchart actually starts with qualifying your client, and it really is the sales process. And there's 3 steps in that process, which is you qualify the client, you get the signed agreement, and you qualify the job order. We keep it really simple. These are steps that recruiters are doing every day. And then we work into the securing the candidate, and that's 4 steps. And that's the sourcing, qualifying, and screening candidates. The last step is writing the candidate documentation up. But a lot of recruiters really put the steps together when they really should be separating them. They'll source and qualify a person and then possibly interview them. I've seen a lot of contract recruiters that'll do sourcing, qualifying, and interviewing all in one step. But it is 3 separate steps, and that's something
I just want
to
clarify something. Daryl Disco, holistic is a bad word, animal bad word. I just said it makes me sick, okay? What do you have to ask me for after I'm so clear? You know, come on. Sorry, Rebecca. Don't like that. Holistic is not a good word. But you know what? If someone's going to give you $20,000 because you say you're using a holistic process, be my guest. It's just beyond me, okay? Now, Rebecca, you know, add a little pep. I don't get the feeling that you're really excited about this thing. What you're saying is, and I understand it to some extent, you know, they hire recruiters. They don't really know what we do. So you should lay it out on paper that these are the steps I have to go through on the search. I have to, you know, get a good job description. Then I have to identify companies where these people might be. I have to identify candidates within those companies. I have to approach them. I have to screen them. I have to interview them. I have to write a report for you, set up an interview. Essentially, that's what you're doing, right?
Yeah, and it is a great process to lay out for a client. I had a client who called me yesterday, and they had found me on LinkedIn and wanted to talk to me about hiring a business development person. The VP of business development called. I put her into a go-to meeting and just put the document on the screen so we could talk. And we talked about the fact that she had four agencies involved in the process. And I said to her, well, I'm out because I won't take it if there's too many agencies. And then we talked about...
What's your limit?
I only take it exclusively.
Oh, really? Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. La-ti-da.
And what did you just say to her? Just say
to her. But I balance it
out.
I have other
as
business,
I drink my
right?
cup of coffee here.
Did you just say, hey, baby, I'm out? Is that how you said it? Just like that?
I told her I was out. As soon as she said four agencies, I kind of giggled and was like, well, I'm out.
Uh-huh.
And the reason I told her was, and we went back to the screen, and I said, listen, you're giving these orders out contingent. Nobody's getting paid. How much focus do you really think is on it? And they've got to go through all of these steps. And when she suddenly realized that she had put it out to four agencies and they were working on it for free, she was going to go back and scale it down to two agencies, and mm-hmm. one for the East Coast and one for the West Coast. Because it's uh-huh. free, it's free money, right? I told her, I said, you'd only get into the client assessment and you'd only run through it once when you and I both know you got to get through a client assessment, which is the first interview process, and then a client validation, which is the second and third interview process. So,
client assessment, what's that? Like, what do you mean? That's part of the process
client,
you tell them about?
Yeah, so the client assessment is when I present the candidate and we talk about it and get them into the first interview. That's the client and I kind of dancing, learning how to dance together and figuring out if we're on the same page. Now,
does
we should
understand
be.
That? I don't know what you're talking about. Client assessment.
No. Must be Canadian.
Client assessment is when you qualify your client at the beginning, like you did. How many other recruiters do you have working on it? 15? No, I'm not interested. That's client assessment. Right.
Well, I use it here for the client assessment of the candidate. Okay,
okay,
the client is assessing.
When you send out the resumes and you get client feedback on the resume, is that what you call it?
Yeah.
Okay.
There's a difference between a client evaluation and a client assessment. The client is assessing the candidate.
The words.
Is today's animal show about coming up with new words for stuff that we've all always done?
Sounds like it.
Oh, my.
Sounds like it, doesn't it? Isn't that funny?
Oh,
I told everybody
to
go back.
Let me jump in here and say, hold on.
Quantifying what she's doing so the clients will pay her instead of just assuming they know and then going, oh, well, this didn't work. I mean, everyone should have at least a written description of what they do, even if they don't share it with the client.
Who's talking?
Yeah,
and
Jerry,
I think that you would understand this better than anyone because none of us really know how successful you are or are not, but created this persona that you are the semi-retired staffing artist, so you should understand that play on words better than anybody.
Okay, Rebecca, how many items are too many for them?
Hey, Mike, I'll give you that one. That was a good one. That was good.
Rebecca, how many items?
Absolutely wrong, but good.
Rebecca, my guest, please. Are you listening to me? Did you hang up already? Did she hang up?
We don't use the word hang up anymore. What should we call it now, guys?
I don't know.
Premature.
The word hang up makes me physically sick.
I see her area code is still there, and she's her mic is on, but she's not answering me. I think she's got a point with this stuff, and I'm going to tell you why. I used to go out with my friend of mine, a great recruiter. He was my partner. Oh, yeah, she hung up. I hope she didn't hang up. But if she hung up, maybe she'll call back. Anyway, I used to make a lot of – I used to call big companies for us to go out and visit them. And the thing is, I knew we'd visit them and ask them to use our services, but I really didn't know what I was going to do when I got there. And people used to start asking questions, and I realized what we have to do when we're out there facing these people, just tell them a story about how we got into business and, you know, what kind of searches we're working, and essentially do what Rebecca is. Rebecca came back and then disappeared again. Let's see, there she is. Rebecca,
hi,
are you there?
Sorry about that.
Yeah, okay.
Something
you
happened to my
purpose.
Line, I don't know.
You did it on purpose because you were mad, okay? Okay with me. Anyway, so
I think I wanted to get back to the point where we need to be talking to our clients in their own language and not ours. So,
what does that mean? French?
Well,
HR like process.
Yeah.
Pardon me?
Is that one of your shills calling in there?
Is Rebecca's
Durbin.
Ringer?
It's Durbin. It's HR loves process. So you give them a process, they feel better.
Okay,
yeah.
Jim Durbin's saying something, right? But you're not always dealing with HR, Jim. Sometimes you're dealing with the hiring manager, hopefully.
Not anymore, dude. Be real.
But even the hiring managers love this.
Yeah, I guess
because
so.
Their HR departments aren't giving it to them.
How many items should you have on the on the list? 10?
300.
The absolute minimum number until they say yes.
Yeah.
I have a story about how many you actually want to have on here.
Reed Creamer
said
something funny. He says you've got accidental disconnection syndrome. Yeah, a lot of my guests have that. Okay, sorry, Rebecca. Go ahead. I've interrupted you too many times.
I had a recruiter who uses. I just taught a class, and the recruiter went out and took the process with her, and in the process of sitting in front of the hiring managers, she showed them the interview process, and they were trying to beat her up on price. So what she did was she turned the document around and she said, "Well, you're asking me to take a 25% discount. I would like to know what 25% of my process you could take out."
Uh-huh.
And the document only has two interviewing processes in it. So during the discussion, they found out that there was three interviews. So she was able to go back to the client and say, "So you're increasing my workload and you're not paying me extra for the extra interview. Should I be discounting my rate for you then?"
Uh-huh.
And the client ended up paying her 25% to do the job.
Okay, so she was quite aggressive about fee. That's how she used her tool to negotiate it. So the interview process had a few different steps, and she listed those on the search documentation. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Before she answers, can you explain what a process is?
Wake up, okay? That's how we talk up here. Okay, so look, Rebecca. I don't understand. It doesn't just say interview. There's something more complex there. Can you explain what the steps of the interview or?
Is there a document that we're all looking at?
No.
Sure.
I mean, is there something that we've got posted somewhere we could all check out while we're talking about it? I'm really.
I'll post it on Twitter as I talk.
Okay.
The interview process has got your scheduling your interview, prepping your client and candidate. The interview and then the debrief and debriefing of the candidate and the client. That's the process because those are distinct steps. When you're scheduling, you're going to have to coordinate everybody's calendars, and there's some people that you might need to include and not include in the process.
Uh-huh.
So,
mm-hmm.
And prepping everybody, you know, we need to prep the clients as much as we're prepping our candidates and asking them about their interview process.
Well, I've got to say, I've never done that, but it sounds like I know that this guy I worked with did it, and it sounds like it's kind of a good idea. At first, it seemed to me just like some kind of bluff. I mean, you want me to find somebody, just tell me who you want, and I'll go do it. You don't have to worry about it. But if you make it look like you're, you know, oh, this is all the stuff I'm doing, they have an idea of what they're paying for something substantial. That's essentially what you're saying, right?
Yes. Yep.
So you told us the general idea, and you know, I told you got to have stories and examples. You told us two stories, right? Do you have another one?
Hey,
yeah,
Rebecca, thanks for tweeting that. Did any of the other participants see her tweet and open it up, or is everybody at Starbucks?
No, I didn't see it.
Well, I did.
Did it say Animal on it, or did she send it just to you?
Yeah
it's at Animal.
Yeah.
And so now we can, I mean, now... You can look at it and know what we're talking about.
Okay, I'm
going to
look at it.
I like the party.
You can thank me later.
Yeah.
Thank you, Jerry.
I want to go straight to the party.
That's very complicated.
Way to trick her into giving away her IP, Jerry.
Yeah, I don't think this is IP.
No, this makes sense, though. I mean, most of the HR people and the hiring managers, they usually think I do all this work and then I produce this, and the only thing my bosses are interested in is this, and they don't appreciate all the back end work. All Rebecca's doing is laying it out and getting them on their side and saying, look at all the things we go through to bring you 1, 2, 3, 4 qualified candidates. By the way, here it is. And, oh, you want me to cut my fee? Why don't you show me the steps you want me to take away?
Makes no difference. You want to know why?
Frankly, though, let's be real. That sounds very gimmicky. It's almost like they teach you that in the auto
they do teach you that.
Sales
they do
school.
Teach you that.
Yeah, I don't like it.
But who's using it? Nobody's using
I
it.
I want to hear what Mike has
Nobody,
to say. Mike A. Stringer, what was that you were going to say?
I'm saying it makes no difference. You know, Jerry's been in this as long as I have. 22 years I've been recruiting. When I first started recruiting, contingency fees were at 30%. Today, the average is between 15 and 20. And why is that? Because desperate, untalented recruiters have pushed down the rates on everybody else. So at the end of the day, if I've got 5 vendors that are doing a relatively good job for me at somewhere between 15 and 20%, there's no way that you're going to convince me to pay you 25. It's just not going to happen.
I disagree with you.
What if the customer knows, okay, yeah, I do want to skip part of this process. Is each one of those parts of the process worth 10% of your fee? What I'm saying is you're not actually wanting your customer to think about what you're saying. You're just hoping that they're like, oh, yeah, that's true. That's cool. Yeah, you win. Or do you want them to pick out 25% of your process?
No.
To me,
no.
You know what?
Are you ready for a real answer, or is it just a fake question?
No, dude, let's give the real answer. I mean, how many clients actually even know what their own internal process is?
Yeah.
And that would be my next
question. I think plenty of them do. I mean, I don't go around assuming my customers are idiots and don't know what I do or what they do.
How many of them also realize that they know their setup is broken?
Uh-huh.
You know what, let me make another comment, though. You know what? I don't know what your steps in the process are, but I'll say this, that if you're not at minimum sourcing me a candidate, doing a phone screen and sending me a summary, I don't want to work with you anyway. So anything beyond that, send me a candidate and I can handle it.
Yeah. Okay.
And those
are
the ones that want to pay you 15%. And those are the ones you don't want.
We're not talking about fees, okay? We talked to Rebecca, anything else about search documentation? Since you seem to think it was worth a whole show, you must have something else. You have more exciting stories about it, or have we reached the end? Because I have other topics.
No, I've reached the end. This is a good segue.
Okay.
Well, can I just add one point, Ben? One point.
Yeah.
One point.
Yeah.
And I don't know if everybody's looking at this, but I am. One of the things that I've always known about sales is you don't want to tell your customer that you are selling them. Right here, you're putting on your list of things that you're doing is you're telling your customer, I'm going to pre-close you, and pre-close is on here four or five times. Why would you tell your customer? I'm just wondering, why would you tell your customer that part of my process is to close you?
Close the candidate. Why wouldn't
I'm just asking.
For me, I'm the verbiage on pre-closing. It's about getting everybody to the table. It's negotiation.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't see it as a problem. Yeah.
And you know what, Rebecca, don't take this as me bashing you, because I promise you I'm not. But the end of the day, if you're going to market me, let me back that up. At the end of the day, the best way for you to do business with me as a new vendor and maybe get a higher fee is to send me a candidate that I can't refuse. Like, send me a resume that I'm like, oh, my God, I got to have this person.
Well, and that goes into marketing candidates. And most definitely, if you're marketing candidates, you're getting the higher fees.
I get 5 calls from recruiters a day, and I say all of them, send me a resume with the heading cut off. If it's a resume I can't live without, we'll talk.
Exactly. But recruiters are hard-pressed to do that. And, you know, you've got
Rebecca,
your salespeople.
Here, let me move on, okay, before everybody starts listening, if they haven't already. What about the idea?
Adam, are you saying they're going to stop listening because I called in this week and I'm talking? Should I shut up?
No, because you said at the end of the day, and that's an animal bad word, okay?
I think Mike is bringing a lot of good flavor to this discussion.
I also told the whole world via Facebook yesterday that you wear ladies' undergarments.
Me?
But we all know
or
that.
Jerry?
You, animal.
Well, thanks. Okay. They don't really care. But, Rebecca, here's the thing. When you're talking process, what about the process of, like, how many candidates are you going to send out at one time? Will you send them out a person as soon as you find a good candidate, will you send that person out? And I know we discussed this recently on the show. If you've got a good candidate, you know, are you going to try to force them to hire the first person rather than make them have them make you go out and look for other people?
I had a client who called me for an executive role in their staffing agency. I knew that they had already looked at 8 people and fired 2 people in that process. So I only submitted 1 candidate to them. And we got them all the way through the process. And at the end of the process, they came back and they were like, he's the perfect fit. We'd love to hire him, but we want more candidates to just balance against them. And I told them, call my competitors. I don't have time. If you want to give me a contingent fee on this or a retained fee, I'll definitely look at it. But in my opinion, you have the best person. Now, they did call my competitors, and they did interview through my competitors. They interviewed 15 people and had 1 failed offer. That's not worth my time. What's the point?
Rebecca?
Yep.
Also, with that process, did they lose your candidate?
Yes, they did. Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, on the flip side, I have had clients that I show them 1 person, and they're not quite sure, so I do give them 2 or 3 more people. But when I know that they've had 8 people and they're just kicking tires, I'm out. I'm not interested. Mm-hmm. Go find somebody else.
Okay. Also, when you know you've got someone who's excellent, you can send out somebody who's, you know, got some stuff, doesn't have others, they say, let me see some more people before I make a move. But if you've got someone who's really good and you know you're going to lose them if they don't make a move quickly, I can see that. I like the way you do that. But what about, you know, you said
can
you
I comment
like
on that, or am I going to get cut off?
You know, go ahead. Just don't say end of the day.
At the end of the day, it's not always HR, even though HR is getting that blame. And I just filled the VP of sales role. I submitted like 11 candidates for that role. They interviewed 5 or 6 of them and ultimately ended up hiring the second person I submitted. And it was the CEO of his company just saying, I want more candidates. And if there was an external recruiter involved, I'm sure they would have been blaming me and going, you know, this damn Mike wants to see more candidates. But that's not always HR's fault.
Yeah, but at some point,
okay.
Mike, don't you have to push back and say, you know, get real? I mean, how many tires do you want to kick?
You're absolutely 100% right. But, again, it's, you know, in this case it was the CEO.
Okay.
I had no choice. I had to keep getting more candidates.
No, there
like
is a customer
Rebecca
service.
Did it, handled it. I like what Rebecca did. Okay, although it's hard because you've already invested time. I mean, you've invested time. You have to say, you know, am I throwing good money after bad, you know, or are these sunken costs?
You know, let's face it, though. Most companies want to interview a couple people.
Granted.
So you're going to give them the first resume and hire this guy or you're out?
No, you give them 2, maybe 3, but you also educate them that we're sending the best people are being presented first. So if you sit there and say, we've interviewed 2 of your 3, Jerry, we love them. Oh, hey, can you bring us some more we want to benchmark against? It's like, no, you've had 3. Your choices. I like Rebecca's take, if you can do it, is, look, you've got the best.
No,
do you want to risk losing
what
these?
What gives you the reason to say that they're the best? Because they came up first?
Didn't the old rule of thumb used to be that you submit 3 candidates for every rec?
Yeah.
That used to be the rule, but if you've got a really good candidate right away, why should you go and get 2 more?
Animal, are you talking about how many send-outs do you do, or how many resumes do you introduce to the company to see if they want to interview? What was your question?
It could be the resume and the send-out. You find
there's a big difference.
Well, if you're presenting a resume, you really should get a send-out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Granted, it's been years since I've been on the agency side, but, you know, I used to teach my recruiters, you send them 1 that's exactly on the mark, you send them 1 that's a little higher and more expensive, and you send them 1 that's a little junior and more and less expensive, and they're going
to
pick the right person.
Okay.
Why wouldn't you send them 3 that are all in the neighborhood of what they've asked for?
It depends on the client.
I'm talking about in a scenario like what Rebecca's saying, that right off the bat, she found the perfect person, Then you send them somebody a little bit higher and more expensive and a little bit lower, and you know they're going to pick the right one. And you've accomplished the goal that they wanted of looking at more than one person.
All right, cool.
Yeah, you're right. But what I had to weigh out was, and I did, I had to take the time back and say, should I be doing this? But they had talked to 8 people. So my impression of this client was they weren't sure, and they couldn't pull the trigger. So my concern was, it didn't matter how many people I put in front of them. They were going to have trouble pulling the trigger.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the assessment.
You know what? Maybe you should have figured that out as soon as before you started the search, after you heard that they've already seen 8 people.
Well, and again, I had been involved with the client and working with them on these other 8, so I knew that they were in the
mix. Oh, I didn't know that. I thought they'd seen those through other people. Okay, let me
get
that question.
Oh, I didn't know that either.
Yeah.
Because
you said you knew that they had. You didn't say that you had sent them 8 people.
No, I didn't send those people. I knew about them. I did not send them.
So that wasn't through you. You're confusing us, just like I said, you know.
Right.
Those other
guys. Were they your people or other agencies'
no.
people?
They were other. No, they were internally sourced candidates for the role.
Did you guys do the send-outs for some other agency?
I want to forget it. I want to move
on.
Hold on, man.
I don't understand this when people aren't clear about stuff sometimes.
Okay. The 8
was
people.
Was it through your agency? Not internally sourced?
I only sent them one person.
You personally?
Personally.
Or your agency?
My agency, personally, me, sent them one person.
Okay.
Okay. Let me be very clear. The 8
Please.
People in the that they had looked at were internal, a couple of internal people. And that they had gone out and solicited resumes from other people in the industry. Those were the 8 people.
Okay.
They came to me, gave me the order exclusively, and when they interviewed my one candidate, I told them to call my competitors. And that's when they opened it up to other agencies and interviewed 15 more people.
After you've drugged that, understood that, Chair. Okay, I know she was a bit confusing. Let me move on, okay? You say
Please
you love
do.
Marketing candidates.
God.
Rebecca, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, you say you love marketing candidates. I was reading your blog. You love marketing candidates. And then you say you call the companies they want to work for. You said there's nothing like a contractor calling you and giving you a list of places they want to work. Why would they give that information to you? Why wouldn't they call those companies directly? When I market candidates, I get a resume, and then I have to put together a call sheet of companies that might be interested in them. What's going on with your marketing of candidates? I don't understand it.
I'm asking the candidates where they want to go and work, and a lot of the people that I'm working with are doing their job every day. So they don't have the time to go and fish through the company and find the right person and get the resume in front of them. And that's what I do. So I'm just doing their job for them.
How many companies will they give you, typically, one guy? How many companies will one candidate give?
None.
I try to get 5. I've gotten as high as 10 and as low as 2.
You're kidding. They'll give you 5 companies off the top of their heads?
Yeah. I had one person who called me and said, this is the perfect job for me, go get it. And we placed her on that.
You sound a bit like a helicopter recruiter. Not quite, but, I mean, there's a resemblance. Now, here's something I'm not clear about. Do you actually make your own call sheets as well to supplement the companies that they're interested in?
Yes.
Okay, so when you typically market, when you market a candidate, how many companies do you typically call? I know it's going to vary from industry to industry. 10.
Start with 10. Yep.
Okay.
10.
Okay. And if they don't have any companies to give you, you still market them?
Yep. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Okay. Does anybody else do that? Ask their people who they want to, where they want to work, and then go out and do it for them? No, no answers? Okay. Everybody wanted to talk before. No one wants to talk when I have a question. No, if no one wants to, Jerry, maybe you should ask that question. Maybe they'll answer you.
Mike would maybe jump in, only if I say something that he could tackle me on.
Mm-hmm. No,
I didn't see any opportunity for controversy.
I don't do contingency work for the most part, so I don't have a comment on that. But
yeah,
I guess I would if a recruiter marketed to me. I guess that would be my first question: is if this person is good, why are they not marketing themselves?
Oh, really? That's not a good question. Okay, because they might be working like she said. Okay, what about metrics? I read one of your
I give you input, and then you criticize me for it. No wonder I'm quiet.
Am I not allowed to criticize, Mike? Do I have, if you say something, do I have to just be thankful?
Yes, Mike.
Idea of the show?
Mike is a bit sensitive.
You should be thankful I even called in today.
I am thankful, Mike. I'm thankful. I defend you against everybody, okay? You rub a lot of people the wrong way, and I'm always saying he's funny, okay? I like him.
I think he's hilarious.
Yeah, okay. Anyway, Rebecca, this guy who's a client of yours on your blog, he wrote a little article, and it was a testimonial for you, and he said that you gave him some metrics to focus on, and you only gave him two things to measure, and he said, that's, I can handle two things. Is that the general rule? You know, people can't really be bothered measuring too many things, so really pare it down, limit what they measure in terms of their activity?
Yeah, you're not gonna measure the fluff stuff, because then people are going to ask you, you know, where do I get candidates? How do I qualify them? I only measure, the only two things I measure is a number of sendouts to clients per week. And, you know, if pushed to the wall, I tell them to make 10 calls in 30 minutes. So 10 calls when they walk through the door, make the calls, and then sit, that gets your day going. But all the other stuff, as long as you have 6 sendouts a week, you're already making money. You're filling your funnel, and your funnel's moving forward. It's a sales process.
6 send-outs.
Rebecca, how do you answer when people do ask you how you find your people?
Pardon me?
I said, how do you answer? You said people ask you how you find your people. How do you answer that question?
I headhunt. I pick up the phone and call people, or they call me because they've seen my stuff in the marketplace.
Okay. So there's two things that you tell people to measure. One's number of calls and one's number of sendouts. Am I right?
Yes.
Okay. Right. Okay. And the people can do that without any problem. So that's what they should measure. Now, you say recruiters, especially independent recruiters, tend to be drama queens. Is that true?
I think so. I think that they get into a lull of depression and they hang out there a little too long. And it typically is because they don't have a lot of other people to talk to. They're talking to candidates and clients and can't keep themselves motivated.
Really?
So give me an example of a drama queen. Surely you've got some stories about drama queens. You can remember those. Come on.
Oh, God. Yeah, I've got drama queens coming out my ears. I had
a
woman.
Tell us a story. Just remove the names.
I had a woman who called me and told me that she had hired 2 people and wanted to get them into training, and she had a flood in her office. She spent 3 weeks worrying about the faux painting in her office, then worrying about her business after she had hired 2 people. And digging into it, we found out that she had hired them on 100% commission and had no direction for her company. Like, what is she doing hiring people when she's worried about her faux painting? She should be focused on closing business.
But what did she say to you? I mean, I don't understand that story. She's worried about her painting. So she mentioned that to you, and then you accused her of focusing on the wrong thing?
No, it was every time you called her, she was, you know, every time she called me, she told me all about the painters and how long they were taking and what they had messed up.
Okay,
and
so she's a nut. She's a nut. And is she a good recruiter? Does she know how to make
money?
What's
that?
Does
she
know how to make money?
Supposedly she needs $500,000, supposedly. I don't know how, but yeah.
You believe that?
No, I don't.
Okay. Tell us about
lying psycho.
Tell us about another one.
I get a lot of recruiters that want the answer to be easy. So they will spend a lot of time whining and crying about the fact that they can't get things done. So you'll give them a process, like make 10 calls in 30 minutes, and they won't do it, and they'll come back to you for another problem. They'll come back and say, well, that didn't work. And when you really dig into it, they haven't done the work. I think a lot of recruiters in their first year are just hoping it'll fall out of the sky, and that's that's really the biggest issue. That's not really a story, though.
When you mean fall out of the sky, what's fall out of the sky? What does that mean exactly?
A client will call them and give them an order. Or a candidate will call them and say, I have the perfect job. Go place me.
Or, hey, here's a recent example. Or a candidate will call and say, hey, I've got an interview coming up because this company just called me. Will you handle it for me? You ever heard of anything like that, Animal?
Yes, I have. Actually, I have a question. I got an email just before the show started, and it's an industry that I worked before and might be even mentioned on my LinkedIn profile, and it's from a company in France. And I looked them up, and they got a website, and all the stuff the guy told me in the letter is true, and his name is there, his picture is there, his VP of whatever, and the phone numbers check out, all the information. But it's written in, you know, by a Frenchman in English that's not perfect. That seems very suspect to me. And I don't know these people. Is that possible that a foreign company, a company that wants to do business in the United States or actually has a business there and wants to hire somebody for it, is it possible that they would send somebody, a senior person would send out a letter in broken English? Or is that a really big red flag, this is a phony, someone's doing something weird here?
Coming from the foreigner who's trying to do business in the U.S.
What are you even talking about?
I got a letter from some VP of a company in France, and it's written in English, but it's not 100% clear because the English isn't good.
Send it to me, I'll check it out. I'm not working today.
I almost just deleted it. Then I took another look, and everything checks out. Rebecca, what do you think?
I think it's a sham.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, because nobody sends anything out in even slightly broken English for business communications. Don't do they?
No. Kelly's got a question on Twitter.
Go ahead.
Kelly who?
I'm terrible
at last
names.
It's impossible. I know. I learned it. Talent
what?
Box.
Block Dyke.
I
just know her as Kelly.
Yeah. Okay. Go ahead. What's Kelly's question?
Do you ever follow up to find out why someone else, better candidate or different source, was selected?
Are you going to answer that for her?
My clients call me back and tell me what they've selected. And then we talk about why they selected that person. Would I call them? Yeah, I guess I would call them because I'm always curious to know why they made that selection. And then I'm always trying to find out if the person's going to last because I want to keep my pipeline filled if the person's not going to stick. So, yeah.
Okay. Now, you said you sort of coach recruiting managers, and you said they should cut people from their team and then recruit undervalued recruiters. Now, how do you decide if you want to cut someone, and how do you identify an undervalued recruiter?
Let's start with identifying an undervalued recruiter. We always have somebody in the office that is going the extra mile, staying late, and closing one or two more deals every month. A lot of agencies just don't do anything for that person. They don't give them extra pay. They don't promote them within their organization. And that person tends to hover out in a corner and isn't part of the team. Then from there is finding those people, right, because they're inside of other organizations. But then who do you cut from your team? And you always need to cut somebody who isn't close to a placement over a quarter. I think that, you know, We tend to let recruiters hang out in our offices for 2 to 3 quarters longer than we really should be keeping them. You know, sometimes people hit a dry patch, but sometimes they need a new environment to move them forward.
Okay, now I understand how you describe the undervalued recruiter, but how do you assess that yourself? I mean, if you were actually recruiting a recruiter, how would you identify that person? With a referral? Okay, rule out the referrals.
You know what? I'm all about the numbers. I want to see production sheets. I want to see their last 3 quarters. And basically, I ask them to pull reports from their companies on their production and black out the company names and any information that would be proprietary to the agency and give those to me so I can have a look at them. I'm getting that information because they don't know how much money they're worth either, so that's why they give it to me.
Okay, and what do you get them at the next company that they didn't get at their current employer?
Usually market value salary, first of all, and
what,
a better
what do you
mean?
Can you give
plan.
Us a story? Can you give me a story? Can you give me an example?
I had
an example.
You need an example. I had an amazing candidate here in Canada. She was a new immigrant to Canada. She'd worked for an agency that hired her at $28,000 base salary and was paying her 3% on everything that she closed. She was handling a book of business of $5 million, and every time she'd ask them for a pay increase, they wouldn't give it to her. She came to me so that I could talk to her about what the market was paying, and we got her landed in a new job at 40 base and 10 and 12% commission with accelerators all the way through. And on top of that, they gave her an increase after 30 days to 45,000.
10% commission, is that good?
When you have a base, it is. It's between 10 and 15%. Yeah. You trade your base for compensation.
I guess. And what was so good about her? You said she was new to Canada. Did she speak English well?
She had an accent, but she spoke perfect English.
Uh-huh.
What did I like about her? Is that what your question was?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
Uh-huh. Why was she so good?
You know what? Because she was a go-getter. She was one of those people that would pick up orders nobody else would fill. And that's how she got an increase at the new company. She filled 3 orders in 7 days. And these 3 orders, nobody else would touch. So she went back to her network and found the people and placed them.
How was she able to fill these hard-to-fill orders no one could fill? They couldn't have been that hard, really.
They were. People had taken they weren't being given the right qualify information. And because she had a technical background, she could figure out what they exactly wanted. So her technical background helped her.
Okay, that was her strength, her technical background, right? You want to tell? Do you have any other stories like this one?
I've had people that come out. You know, a lot of my recruiters come out of abusive environments. So, taking them out of the big agencies that are driving them for numbers, and continuing to move the goalpost on them, are the people that I end up with. And then
can you tell me a story about someone like
that?
I want to hear about someone from an abusive environment. Because you just said. You surprised me. I thought an abusive environment would be, you know, a very small office with some unprofessional manager who's screaming and yelling all the time. What do you mean by an abusive environment? Tell us real story.
Okay, so I actually had a girl that we took out of a very large company that was being driven to her numbers constantly, and every time she reached her goal, they would increase her her quota. So there was never any time for her to catch up and make money. Meanwhile, she had lost 4 or 5 managers in the process, and they would take accounts away from her and things like that. I moved her. I accidentally put her in an abusive environment.
Oh!
And the environment got to the point where they moved offices and made the staff come in and sit in an office with no electricity and no air conditioning. So she called. She was upset. I went in, met her. She quit, and we placed her in a regional company. Within 7 days, we placed her in a regional company that allowed her a desk with electricity and air conditioning and everything else that she needed. And she's still there. She's there, 2 years later?
Okay, so they were cheating her in terms of money. That's the real key on that one. Every time she started making money, they made it harder to make money. Is that right?
Yeah.
Do you have another story?
Which gender is more successful overall in recruiting, male or female? That was a legitimate question.
Yeah, you
so.
Know what? And I've got 2 answers for you. I truly believe that women are more successful in the corporate environments, the big houses, the Manpowers, the Adecos, the regional companies. And men are more successful in independent shops, working out on their own. the independent women that I meet that own their own shops are just all over the map. They're just they have no business sense from what I could see.
True. Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
thanks for answering that question.
Any more stories about people you've placed, recruiters you've placed, what motivates them to make a move?
I had another recruiter that, again, was he was being written up. Every time he hit his goals for the company, they wrote him up because he wasn't submitting enough. So even though he was getting enough client interviews, he wasn't submitting enough candidates, so they would write him up for not submitting enough candidates. And we ended up moving him into another little company where he was able to help them make their very first perm placement. They typically were working contract and never seen the revenue from a perm placement. So he went in and broke the doors open on that.
Mm-hmm. And do people like Jerry is a contract recruiter. Is that really better than making permanent placements?
I'm not a contract recruiter.
Okay, you place people on contract. Sorry.
You're
not working
as,
on contract.
As well as direct placement. Would you
stop
characterizing me as just a contractor?
You know, sorry, Jerry, but you told me a million times that the real money is where people work
on
contract.
Yes, that's where the real money is. Would you shut up about it?
Yes. He's right. That residual income is very, very nice, and it keeps you out of the trough of the ebb and flow of
the contract is great, but of course we do direct placement.
Yeah, but like
ten send-outs this week on direct placements.
Yeah.
But, Rebecca, that contract stuff only works with really IT. Am I right about that?
Mm-hmm.
No. There's lots of other contractors out there.
Engineering, quality,
yeah.
Accountants. Accountants is one of the largest employers in the world, Animal.
Okay. Okay. Now, what do you do exactly, Rebecca? Now, you've told us that you're a recruiter. You recruit recruiters, right? That's what you do, right?
I'm actually a recruiter's coach. I'm a trainer. I train recruiters.
Yeah, that's what I said at the beginning. But now you're showing us that you're actually a recruiting – you place recruiters. That's what you do as well, right?
I do that. I do about one a month, and I don't mix that with my training stuff. I do more training now than I did before.
Okay,
so the stories I'm giving you are a bit outdated.
Okay, so if you do a training, who are you training for, the recruiting managers or the actual recruiters or a whole team?
I'm training everybody. I'm training brand new people to the industry, and then I'm also training executives. So there's a couple of different things I do. First of all, everything's done via the web, and it's usually a half-day meeting. And then after the meeting, we come back 2 weeks later and debrief on what they've learned so that they've implemented it. I've had people come that own their own shops right through to managers of organizations that are looking to expand their knowledge. I do a marketing candidates class on Friday once a month. I do mastermind meetings where we have a group of people that are in the same sector, not same sector, but same level, come in and talk, and we get their problem solved and go from there.
Okay, now
and then
I do rookie
and sales training.
Okay, so I've had you, on the show. You've been on the show before, so I know, and I met you personally, so I know you're a nice person. But what else is there about you that makes you worthwhile for these people? I mean, do they come back and say, "Look, Rebecca," because mostly you can't. You take a training. And then, if it works for you, okay, great. If it doesn't, it doesn't. Does anyone come back and say, yeah, this is what worked for me. This is what I liked. You know why people like you, or you know what they don't like about you?
They don't. I'll start with what they don't like. They don't like that I'm aggressive and pushy sometimes when it comes to people's success.
Abusive?
I'm a little bit quirky, so that's also a hindrance. I'm not as well polished as, your Bill Vicks and your Scott Loves. So that tends to actually work in my favor because I'm more approachable than most trainers.
Those guys are approachable, but I'll say they're approachable because I know them too. Okay. So you feel you're approachable, but what is there about what you do that makes it work? And how often does it work? I mean, you must get people that really are not helpable. They take the course, but you can't help them. Is that true?
Yes. Yeah. And the hardest thing for me is is not chasing them and trying to help them too much, because you just get overextended. So it's, you know, you show them the process, you give them the doorway to call you back and say, no, it didn't work. So every course you take with me, you could take as many times as you need to get it to stick. That's never a problem. And I've only had a couple of people that have actually come back and taken the courses that didn't get it the first time. And I work with those people. So there are people that just, I had a woman who came to training. Animal, halfway through training, she told everybody, she asked me when I was going to get to marketing candidates and that she was too busy to take the course. She paid for the course. I didn't beg her to come to class, but she paid for the course.
Okay, so you get some nuts. You get some nuts. I'm trying to figure out, where do you think people benefit from you the most? Where do you see the greatest gains?
The greatest gains are the individual recruiters that get tangible, they can see tangible results with what I teach them.
Yeah, from what? From marketing candidates? What's the skill that you teach that pays off the most?
The marketing, the candidates, and headhunting skills. Teaching people how to pick up the phone and not send an email. And teaching them to have a conversation with people versus giving them a script. I don't give people scripts. I show them why a conversation works, and then I help them develop their own script that works for them. So it's not a cookie-cutter situation. You're not going to get a book of scripts from me. You're going to get the building blocks of how to do something, and then you
well,
put them together the way you want.
Well, my last question then, what's a conversation? What is a conversation? I don't understand what you're talking about. You've got, you don't want to read something like you're a robot, but essentially you're going to say the same thing to almost everybody, aren't you?
Pretty much, but it's just, again, it's how you're saying it. We teach people how to, you know, how to have that hello, how are you, and an icebreaker. We teach recruiters how to exit conversations. And then we
how do you
give
exit
them
a conversation? That's the last thing. Just tell us that. Give us that freebie. How do you exit a conversation?
You thank the person for their time. And
just like
say,
abruptly?
Well,
okay, thanks.
You wait for
great
a space in the conversation. It has been amazing talking to you. Thank you for your time.
And if you're at a networking event and someone's talking your ear off, how do you get rid of them?
Pretty much the same way. You wait for
okay.
a little bit of a lull in the conversation. You say thank you.
That's one of your favorite questions, Animal. And I don't even know why I asked it. You don't even go to networking events.
She's the only one who gave like that kind of answer. Usually they say, "Oh, excuse me, I got to get another drink, or I got to go to the washroom, or I got to talk to that person." Nobody just tells them bluntly, "I don't want to talk to you anymore." Okay, now Rebecca, just one more time. Your website is rbs-staffing. .com. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
And it's Rebecca Sargent. Is that an English spelling of Sargent? S-A-R-G-E-A-N-T? Rebecca
Sargent. Yes, it is.
Sargent. Okay. Rebecca, we're going to Jerry's show. You're not
thanks
allowed
for coming,
to stay
Rebecca.
On. Neither am I.
Thanks.
Thank you.
This is one of those days where I hope everybody has already hung up so the show does not go on and I can get back to being mellow. Today is mellow day.
Do you think that Rebecca does not deserve a full after show?
No. I was just subconsciously hoping that she was so good that there's nothing controversial at all, and nobody has really anything to challenge anybody about, and, you know, we all just go about our mellow day. But
I have some challenges, but I am happy to forego them for you to be able to end the after show early.
No. So, hey, Mike, so you're moving into a brand new place? Is that have I gathered that? What's the deal?
A friend of mine passed away, and we bought the house. Yeah.
Ooh.
So we're just in there working the remodeling and redoing everything.
Mm-hmm. What do you guys think about Rebecca?
I know Rebecca personally, and we've worked together in the past, so I have nothing bad to say about Rebecca. My only comment would be that some of the things that she teaches, in my opinion, are too scripted. And, you know, I get marketed via my clients by recruiters all the time. And, you know, you could tell when somebody is sort of, I don't want to go so far as to say reading from the script, but using the script versus somebody who, you know, is just sort of experienced and knows what they're doing. And you know, as someone who's marketed to, I don't want to hear a bunch of BS about how you're better than the guy next door. You know, market me a great candidate. Honestly, ask me, you know, hey, can I take a shot at this? But I just don't want to hear the scripted, canned things that I've been hearing for years. You know what I mean? And
yeah,
quite frankly,
kinda,
that 20-some years ago I was taught to say. You know what I mean?
Right, but you've got to start there, man. Don't you? I mean, you have to start with, hey, here's what you say when somebody answers the phone. Now, you've got to start there. And maybe she teaches more of the basics and stuff than, you know, helping a 20-year recruiter, I don't know, get back on track or, you know, something like that. I don't know.
You know what? The new salesperson that I have that I'm training, you know, I have her basically making a call and saying, you know what, I'm calling from Human Capital Consultants. Our area of expertise is the placement of full-time and contract human resources and corporate recruiting professionals. You know, tell me about where you are in the role, basically. I mean, I'm paraphrasing. That's not exactly what she's saying, but close. You know what I mean? Just, hey, here's who we are. Here's why I'm calling. Is this something I can help you out with? I mean, I don't need a bunch of salesy scripts about how much better you are and how much better your process is and why my thing is worth more than the guy next door's. You know what I'm trying to say?
Right, right. Who's got their phone on a speakerphone and is shuffling around through their desk drawers and stuff?
That's probably me.
Durbin?
David Perry. And if it is,
I apologize.
Yeah.
No way.
No way who? No way what?
How's it going, man?
It's good. Good. I'm not just always a stalker. And I didn't realize that the keyboard was so close to the thing. I was just congratulating one of my clients on selling his company for billions and billions and billions of dollars.
Wow.
Good story.
Man.
But the only unfortunate thing is I'm now not going to get a senior level search. But, you know, I'm just happy for him, that's all.
Yeah, very cool.
But, sorry, I apologize. I was typing. I was typing him a note.
Yeah, so did you call in to support your local Canadian recruiters, your trainers, Rebecca and Animal?
No.
You just called in just to see what's going on? Or come on, man.
No,
that's some special reason. You are famous, dude. You don't have this kind of time.
I was out doing something, and I noticed something, and somebody made the comment that, you know, maybe she teaches, you know, junior people, or maybe she's not.
That's what I said. That was my comment.
For a 20-year vet. I know who it was. But I'm just being nice. But the point is, and somebody else pointed out, everybody's got to start somewhere, and in my experience, even the most experienced recruiters periodically need to be reminded of the basics because they forget.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody, in my opinion, you know, should have to go back to school and learn this stuff or new stuff every single year. I've never met a trainer that I didn't learn a whole bunch of stuff from. Maybe because I'm just, you know, that stupid. I don't know. But can I ask you a question? Yes.
Am I just cynical because I come from a recruiting background that when I get those marketing calls, I can just tell they're reading from a script and it gets on my nerves? Do HR people actually, I don't want to go so far as to say fall for it, but do HR people actually react positively to those scripts? Am I just being cynical?
Good question.
No, you're not being cynical. And you know, and we all get those calls at dinner time or in the morning, and it's always from someone who's going to do something. It's like the old days when I was training as a junior recruiter, they used to teach us to say, if I was able to show you a way, fill in the blank, to save money, save time, whatever, my God. I mean, I actually heard that come out of a sales guy a couple of weeks ago. There was one phone call that happened 2 weeks ago to me. This guy pitched me. He called. I wish I could have recorded this. This guy called me up and he says, "You owe us money and I'm coming after you. Are you ready?" And I said, "Okay, well, that's a good opener because I don't owe anybody any money because I'm debt free. But I love that opener. What's this about?" And he went straight into his pitch, which was great. You know, he was pitching collection services. You know, and I said, you know, I said, "Well, I don't really have any of that need right now, but I was about to ask him a question." And he went right into his rebuttal. And then I said, I said, "Stop, I'm interested." And he went right into his next rebuttal. This happened three times. On three separate occasions, I said, "Yes, I'm interested." I actually said, "Yes, I'm interested in your services." Didn't get a chance to say whatever it was I was thinking at the time. But every time I said yes, he went into another rebuttal. It's like he didn't hear me. Like, yes never came out of anybody else's mouth, ever. And he went right into his next rebuttal. And I just said, "You're a jackass," and I hung up.
You know, it's funny. I've been doing a lot of sales recruiting this year. And, you know, when you're phone interviewing a salesperson, a lot of them tend to go so overboard, exactly like you just said, in selling themselves and closing. And it's like, "You know what? Hold on a second. I think you're a good candidate. Stop closing me." You know what I mean? But it's exactly like you just said. You don't get the chance to react because they're just closing. And I see that as a negative. I mean, that's not an effective salesperson. You know, when somebody says,
"Oh,
yeah,
no,
stop,"
it's horrible.
You know what I mean?
But that's the typical sales. Sorry, my opinion only, guys. That's a typical salesperson consultant. In our industry, has been for
years.
So then
let me ask you then, guys. I don't know if you all had the opportunity to look at the process sheet that she gives to her customers. Would you give something to your customer?
I know Rebecca personally.
Okay, well, I mean, would you hand your customer something that on there says multiple times, "I'm going to close you," which is, in a sense, what that says on there. Are you okay with it? Maybe I'm the one that is just overly sensitive to words and verbiage. I would never hand my customer something that says, "Step 7, close you, sell you."
I haven't seen it, so I can't comment.
Okay.
You know,
all right.
But I'm in the same boat. I wouldn't do that to a customer either. But I don't sell. I never have. I'm not good at it. I solve problems.
You know, it's funny, Gary, is you mentioned that I bought a house. So when I was packing up my home office in my old house, I found years and years ago, I was a regional director for Manpower Professional, and I found the training manual that we used for new recruiters.
Yeah.
And I sat and I was reading through it, and I thought to myself, the things that I used to teach 15 years ago, I would never teach today. I guess my mentality toward this business has changed significantly over the years. But just that salesy, always closing, you know, reading from a script, it just doesn't appeal to me anymore. You know what I mean?
You know, and I don't even think it would even work anymore in today's technical era, because back then it was all a numbers on the telephone connections, say the same thing enough times to enough people and you're going to connect. Well,
yeah, dialing for dollars days are long gone.
Yeah, we may have all started there, but If you didn't adopt your own style and take the parts of that worked, make it your own, and move ahead, then you're not in recruiting really anymore, you know, because that stuff is not working anymore, which is why I have a hard time growing my company, because I don't know how to really get someone started in recruiting. There's not a list of phone numbers to call, and I can't write down a, "Hey, call these people and ask them this." And if they say that, then you say this. There's none of that going on. I mean, it's all internet and LinkedIn, and yeah, it's weird. I don't know where a new recruiter would even start.
Can I tell you what I'm doing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, the person that I have training right now, I mentioned I hired a new salesperson. She's been with me for about a month. Her only goal is to get me on the phone with a potential prospect. So she's calling. Our approach is very hands on the, you know, cards on the table. Here's what we are or who we are, and here's what we do. Understand you're looking for this. You know, is that something that we could talk about? Goal getting me on the phone, and then she listens to me on the phone. So,
wow. Okay.
I mean, I'm sort of doing it in baby steps, right? Cold calls, spend your day cold calling. She's making about 40 calls a day. spend your day cold calling. Your goal of that call is to get me on the phone with the prospect. And then I can't tell her what to say and how to handle every scenario. She's just going to learn by listening to me do it. And listen, I'm not salesy and I'm not closing all the time either. Again, I'm very, here's what we are, here's what we do. You know, if there's a good fit here, I'd love to do business.
Well, you know, it's really interesting. You can't be, I mean, that's good to hear, because I think that you can't be salesy with candidates. I mean, they all know what we do, and you're either have an opportunity that's going to fit, you know, where they're going in life, or you don't. And I find that, you know, when you turn on the high pressure, you turn people off immediately. So our goal is always just to establish a connection and have a conversation. I had a guy, I can't remember the number of times I actually had a decent phone call with a prospect, either a candidate or a client, on the first phone call. You know, I had the president of a large technology company. Years ago, I phoned her and pitched her, and she just ripped me a new one and hung up. And so the next day, I called her back, and she said, "Didn't we have this conversation yesterday?" And I said, "Oh, I thought you were just being a bitch yesterday. I didn't know you were always like this." And she laughed. You know, but so my whole point of this is you can start with scripts because they help you structure your thought process. But at the end of the day, with both candidates and clients, you know, you have to be, I hate the term authentic, but that's what it is. You got to be genuine. And I think recruiters, what we really do for a living is solve problems. And if we solve problems by hiring somebody into an organization that solves a problem for that employer that, you know, that employer wasn't able to solve by themselves.
All right.
And
but
hey, Jerry,
you still need to get connected in with them, though. You still need to, at some point, be heading either up or downstream with them in the same canoe. And
oh, there's
get,
no question.
Get
but,
there.
But
I mean, you got to knock through some stuff, you know.
You have to have the conversation.
And somebody was getting ready with another question. Somebody had a question.
In order to have the conversation, you got to get them to drop their protective guard. And to get them to drop their protective guard, I find you have to start off by being 100% genuine. And then a lot of times it's just asking a simple question.
You know, most of my customers over the years, you never really start off with the first time you connect with them or even that first time they say, "Hey, I'll give you a shot at this." Normally, my first sale or placement with a company is a year or two into actually knowing them and being able to call them and email and communicate with them. It's never that first, you know, couple of phone calls. "Hey, great, yeah, do you have a guy? Send them over here." It's rarely that. My long-term customers, I've known long before I did my first send-out replacement with them. And I don't know why that is. I don't know.
You know, Jerry, when you talk about the way things used to be, too, I'm reminded of, I think it was your Facebook group, but it might have been Animals. Somebody posted a week or two ago that they went to work for a staffing firm, and they had to bring candidates in to interview regardless of if they had an opening or not. And how do they go about doing that? Do you remember that post?
Yeah, that was in my group. Animals isn't really a recruiting group. It's just like a social deal. Mine is actually Recruiting Issues. So that's where
I
would have found it.
I was reminded of the old days when she asked that question because, you know, 20-some years ago, that's how we were judged, right? And
yeah,
that's what we were told. You bring enough people into the office, you're going to make a placement. And it didn't matter if we had jobs or not. We were judged on filling up the file cabinet in the back of the room with resumes and getting people in for interviews. And it just made me chuckle when I read that posting because that's the way things used to be. And
yeah, because
you know,
within 6 months, you're going to be gone, but they still get all the database. They've got the big pile of resumes. And back then, that was the gold, man. That was it, dude. Phone numbers and resumes, wow.
Yeah.
So you're just pushing everybody to just load that stuff up. And then the couple of good old boys that had been there for years, the party club, would just cherry pick through there making all kinds of placements.
It's funny when you start having this conversation how much our business has changed over the years.
Yeah.
Can I jump in here?
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, this is Todd Porter, usually just a fly on the wall. But
hi, Todd.
Todd Porter. I've enjoyed this after the show more than the show this time, so So I just wanted to jump in and say a couple things. One is, whoever was saying, you know, our business is to solve problems, that's so right on that it's kind of frightening. But the we do that through relationships. And the problem of bringing somebody new in, it's like trying to teach them to dance. You know, they can start looking at their feet and going 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, but it's until they feel natural and it just kind of flows, and that they'll be productive or not. So that's my
opinion. That was David Perry, one of the number one recruiters in Canada, is the guy that said that. Hey, David.
They recruit in Canada? Sorry.
Yeah, over in
no, we solve problems.
Yeah, they solve problems. Yeah, there's no recruiting up there.
They solve problems via their process.
Well, thanks for calling in, Todd. How could we find you? Where are you? What do you do?
I've communicated with Animal a couple times. I have my own search firm. I've had it for about 17 years, and
awesome.
I have a very strange niche. I recruit almost exclusively for Israeli companies hiring in the U.S.
Love it. That's the way to do it, man. I would have never even thought that there were any Israeli companies in the U.S.
There's more Israeli companies on NASDAQ than any other country. Canada's third. But
wow.
There's about 130 Israeli companies on NASDAQ. So,
do you have to train your Israeli managers on interviewing? Because I'll tell you a really quick story. I worked on it for an Israeli-based company as a contractor in New Jersey years ago, and I brought a candidate in to interview, a young woman, and she came out, her face was white, and I said, what happened? What's wrong? She said that the manager said to her, I'd love to hire you, but you're a young, pretty girl, you're going to get married and have babies, and then I'm going to have wasted all the money training you.
Yeah, that's... It used to be, it's better than it used to be that way. I had a customer that was actually been in the States for 10 years, and it was a manufacturing company down in North Carolina. And so I said to him, I said, now you know what you can ask. And he, I've been 10 years, da 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 da. First two candidates I send in, they come out and they call me, and the guy goes, we talked for like 10 minutes. It went dead silence. And then he said, so how old are you? Are you married? Are you happily married? like I say, it's not that bad anymore, but it used to be.
I got a better story than that. I had a client in technology who had been looking to replace a president in Japan. They had three of the largest search firms in the world, including one here in Canada, on the search for a year, and they came up with nothing. And for lack of anything better to do, they gave us, quote-unquote, a shot at it. So get this. Within 4 days, we recruited the presidents of their top three competitors in Japan and presented their resumes, and then we spent 3 weeks convincing them that these guys were real and we didn't make it up. Now, fast forward. We spent $12,000 to fly this guy over to Canada for the interview. He's 68 years old, which, if you know anything about Japanese culture, is, you know, the prime age to get a senior executive, because that's when they actually have, you know, street cred. They don't call it that. Anyway, he walks into the interview, and I'm there with the client. And the guy that's doing the interview is at least 50 years old, very seasoned guy from a telecom company. And he looks at my candidate, and he goes, how old are you? And the candidate says, very proudly, 68. And the guy says, oh, well, we were looking for someone more in their early 40s. But let's talk. And they loved this guy. They loved this guy. And they made him an offer. But the interview was over at that moment in time. And we're walking out of the meeting 3 hours ago, and he says to me, the candidate says to me, how did that go? I said, it went fantastic. We're going to make you an offer. He said, but you're not going to take it, are you? He says, no. Do you know why? I said, absolutely. I know why. Let's go have dinner and have a drink and put you back on the plane. You know, and this company ended up hiring into Japan the president of another company who was Korean. So they put a Korean in Japan to manage Asia Pacific, and the profits went from $155 million in sales that year down to $7 million. And people were scratching their head asking why. So... culture has a lot to do with it, and
everything to do with it when you start dealing with
just because your clients are old doesn't mean they're smart. unbelievable. I was just so shocked. Then the client said to me, so are you going to get somebody else? I said, no. I said, we've just mailed you back your retainer. You're fired. It was just unbelievable.
Hey, Jerry, before you get the scores.
Yeah.
Scores, did you see the picture I posted on Facebook of my new hillbilly truck?
No.
You'd have been so proud. The truck I'm doing for the work I'm doing for the house. It's got big mudder tires on it, loud exhaust. You'd be so proud.
Nice. I think you and I are switching personalities here lately.
Maybe.
Could be.
I've been in jeans every day this week. I don't think I've wore jeans for a solid week in 20 years.
Well, hey, for the guys that don't call in often, David, Todd, we like to each week have a score for the show between 0 and 100 for both the guest and then also animal. It's just something we do. I mean, you know, do we have to do it? No. But it's just kind of part of the fun. It helps everybody, have something to talk about. David, what did you think of Rebecca as a guest?
I only got the last 5 minutes.
Doesn't matter. See, we don't care.
What do I think of Rebecca as a guest?
Yeah.
Good. Good.
So give me a score.
8.
80?
No, 7. Sorry,
yeah,
7
gotcha.
On 10.
Yep, out of 100. So that's an 80. What about for animal?
I didn't hear a word of anything he said.
Oh, so 100 then probably.
No, animal. It's going to be like a 2.
Yeah.
You get better for not saying anything.
The screaming nauseates me, and I only dialed in this week. This is the first time I've ever listened to the show, and
yeah,
I just wanted
I've never
to get
seen
it,
you on
and,
here. Yeah.
I've just been too damn busy, and I apologize for that, and that'll never happen again. But I just apologize. I dialed in today to see what it was going to be like because I've heard of the rumors about the abuse.
Yeah.
And I just wanted it, to have an anticipation of how bad it was going to be for me next week. So
rumors of abuse. Gotcha. How about Porter?
I'll give him both 75 because I missed the second half of the show.
Okay. All right. What do you think, A Stringer?
I'm going to give Rebecca a 90 for a couple of reasons. I like Rebecca. I think she, within her niche, she does a good job. And I don't want her to take my comments as criticism because it might not be for me, but it doesn't mean it doesn't work.
Gotcha.
And I'm going to give Animal an 85 because I think... I think he handled the show well this week. I mean, it was obvious coming in that he would not have been abusive of Rebecca, but, he handled her well.
Yeah, I think Canadians get kind of like a free pass, so, David, you're good. I mean, I wouldn't worry about it. There was no abuse today.
And I subtracted 5 points because he said that I pissed people off.
You're a teddy bear, man. Huh. I started watching, I hope I'm catching it toward the beginning. They're going back through all the Sopranos on HBO. I hope this is still the first season.
When you go in demand, it'll tell you what season it is. I think because I was
no, this is just running
too.
On the HBO channel. I'm not doing the on demand part.
I think they're showing season 3 right now.
Really?
Yeah.
Dang it!
Why don't you take all those big bucks you got, spend 50 bucks, and you can get the entire series on DVD.
I'm not a DVD guy. I like it to be on the TV. That's just my thing. I've got like 6 DVDs.
The Mercedes has a DVD player in the dash.
Nice.
So when I'm driving back and forth to Boston, you can't watch it while you're driving, but I listen to the episodes.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I'll have to see if mine does. I think it does.
Yeah, if you have the navigation and all that in your dash.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's got it.
It's in the glove compartment? Where do you put the CD in?
The same place you put a. The same place you would put a. You put the DVD in. The same place you put the CD in.
Yeah, I haven't even messed with that stuff. I just do Bluetooth and that's about it.
Isn't that awesome? You get in the car and your phone just connects. I love that.
Oh, dude, this car is fantastic, man.
Yeah, I love mine.
All right, everybody. Did anybody else want to have any questions or offer anything? Anybody that didn't say anything? Anybody? Nope. All right. Well, thanks for hanging in there, everybody. And so, David, you're on with us next week, then?
Apparently.
Just come with some examples, and that's kind of your specialty, isn't it? Stories.
I got all kinds of stories.
All right, man. We'll see y'all next week.
And they can process back and forth all week.
All right, later.
Well, we're looking ahead, and the future does not look good for LinkedIn. We're looking ahead, and the future does not look good for LinkedIn.